Right, guys. Do you know what? Fuck the usual introduction. I don't have any capacity in my brain for formalities today after what I've just witnessed for the past 5 hours, maybe 6 hours. Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's former chief political advisor, was grilled basically all day today by a committee of MPs who are essentially trying to piece together an accurate picture of what happened in Downing Street when all of these decisions about the pandemic were being made. They're calling this inquiry an inquiry into the lessons learned. That's what they're calling it, the lessons learned from the pandemic. So what went wrong? Why did it go wrong? Who's to blame? And how can we not go wrong next time is the point of it all, I suppose. And basically Dominic Cummings' approach was see everything that we did, all the things we did, basically. If we just don't do any of that next time, it'll probably go better. That was how disparaging it was. He basically pointed at everything that's happened, maybe except the vaccine rollout and a couple of other tiny things. But he basically said all of it was a disaster. I haven't introduced myself. I'm Julia Bell, and I'm going to walk you through some of the madness today. I'm recording this at 4:48 p.m. on Wednesday, the 26th of May. So I've spent the entire day, ever since 9:30 this morning, watching this kind of unfold. Cummings threw so much shade at the Prime Minister, it is impossible to go through all of it. Actually, do you know what? The main victim wasn't the Prime Minister. The main victim of the Dom bombs, as the media are calling them, was the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. My God, that man got a lashing today. So I'll hit you with all the key things. If you find it helpful to listen to this podcast and if it helps you kind of get up to speed on the news without being spoken to, you know, like some robot, then please do subscribe to the podcast. It really helps me out. Or click follow if you're listening on Spotify. And without further ado, let's get into this. So the committee, this committee that are doing this lessons learned inquiry, they kind of ran through the events of last year in a relatively linear order. So they started by asking Dominic Cummings, right, what was the initial approach when the outbreak first happened, kind of at the end of 2019 and at the start of 2020? And then they kind of went from there. So that was the first topic. And I mean, to be honest, the shocking stuff starts straight away, because Dominic Cummings' response to that was, right, our first approach was herd immunity. That was our first plan, plan A. In other words, you know, herd immunity is, right, let's let this virus kind of sweep over the nation and do its natural thing. Yes, we'll keep the most vulnerable members of society shielded, we'll keep them indoors, but as for the rest, we'll try and slow it, but let's just let the virus do its thing. And then eventually, after that initial peak, and after the worst of it, hopefully the majority of society will have developed antibodies and they will essentially have herd immunity, what's needed to fight this thing off. Then we can reintegrate the more vulnerable members of society, because COVID will be a thing of the past. That's the vague concept. And Cummings said clear as day, that was the plan. And he doesn't point the finger at Boris Johnson for this, per se. In terms of the outset, he actually says, well, Boris Johnson and everyone in the government, we were advised by SAGE, which were the main body of people handling this. That's the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies. You've heard SAGE be referenced all the time, but SAGE were the ones that would come to us and tell us, okay, herd immunity looks like the way to go. Let's do it this way. And of course, there's people that are going to inevitably die, but, and that is the word that Cummings kept using, was inevitable. It's all inevitable. So that was the plan. We're going to inevitably let this virus do its thing, and then it'll all be over by winter. So that was plan A. And he made it quite clear at the time that plan A was the only plan. It wasn't like they had a backup option. The scientists were so sure of this, and therefore the government was so sure of it, that that was what was happening. Now, bear in mind, guys, the government, of which Dominic Cummings is no longer a part, adamantly deny this. This concept that herd immunity was the only plan, the plan A, they just vehemently deny it. And they have done for over a year. If you watch any interview with Matt Hancock, the health secretary, who we learned today is literally Dominic Cummings' least favourite person on planet Earth, you can see that they have just denied this herd immunity thing forever. It was just never on the table. In fact, why don't I play you a clip from way back when? Have a listen to this. It's a Good Morning Britain interview, back when Piers Morgan was still in the gig, from March 2020. And this is Matt Hancock denying the herd immunity thing.
Herd immunity has never been the strategy, as I've made clear.
Your own chief scientific officer said on the radio, literally 10 days ago, herd immunity was the strategy. Was he lying?
No, he didn't say that.
So there you go. That's from donkeys ago in March 2020. And I don't want you to have a go at me because I'm using old clips. So just to hammer the point home that the government continue to deny this whole herd immunity concept, here's an interview with the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, on The Andrew Marr Show 3 days ago.
Can you now admit as government that herd immunity was the policy until March?
Not at all, no. Absolutely not. Our policy, from the outset, Andrew, the policy and the strategy...
So why is Dominic Cummings telling us that that's true?
Well, I can't speak for Mr. Cummings and one individual, but what...
So if you say it's not true, he said it was on all the graphs, it was on all the paperwork in those crucial meetings. Presumably, therefore, he cannot be bringing hard evidence of this. If you say it's
not true... So what I would say to this, I'm not going to comment on what Mr. Cummings is going to say or also what is being speculated about right now. And our strategy was always about protecting public health, saving lives and protecting the NHS.
Okay, Priti Patel there on The Andrew Marr Show, literally a matter of days ago. So what we have on our hands here is a direct he said, she said. So this is two directly opposing accounts of history. So already, as the public, we're put in a position of like, somebody's lying. Somebody is lying through their teeth because you can't have such opposing accounts and both of them be true. There was also this other piece about how urgently the government were treating COVID at the start of 2020. How much of an emergency were they treating this as? And, you know, think back to sort of the end of January 2020. We were all a bit confused about what COVID actually was. The WHO turned around and declared that this was indeed an emergency, a health emergency. And you kind of saw various countries sort of far away acting on this and rolling out restrictions and border controls and so on. And Cummings said, oh yeah, when this was happening, literally it couldn't have been less of an emergency. Nobody cared. Let me play you this clip. I'll just tell you now, it's less than comforting.
The government itself, a number 10, was not operating on a war footing in February on this in any way, shape or form. Lots of key people were literally skiing in the middle of February. It wasn't until the last week of February that there was really any sort of sense of urgency, I would say.
Yeah, so this question, how seriously were they taking it? Dominic Cummings says key people were literally skiing. I don't know why he said literally before he said skiing, but something about it just made you feel even more depressed about how seriously the government were taking this. Obviously, you know, I'm thinking back to February 2020. I was skiing. I actually was skiing at that time. I've probably skied right past one of our key officials who really ought to have been in Downing Street. But, you know, we, the public, knew nothing. We knew nothing about this in February 2020. It was still just something that we thought could never really affect us. That's definitely how I felt. But the government, people in there, you would have hoped that they had more of an idea, more information. And from Dominic Cummings' account, at least, it seemed that they were as leisurely about it as we, the public, were. And actually, before I move on, just on this topic of how seriously the government were taking COVID, or not, as the case may be, Cummings came out with this just ridiculously incriminating thing. We knew he was going to come out with some dom bombs, as everyone's calling them, but this I was not expecting. So he turned around and he said, in fact, I'll play you the clip, but it was talking about Boris Johnson and his approach to COVID, his personal approach to COVID, and with hindsight of knowing that Boris Johnson caught COVID and nearly died. To hear this account of how glib he was about it is truly sickening. Have a listen.
In February, the Prime Minister regarded this as just a scare story. He described it as the new swine flu.
Did you tell him it wasn't?
Certainly. But the view of various officials inside Number 10 was, if we have the Prime Minister chairing COBRA meetings and he just tells everyone, it's swine flu, don't worry about it, I'm going to get Chris Whitty to inject me live on TV with coronavirus, so everyone realises it's nothing to be frightened of, that would not help actually serious planning.
So there you go, Dominic Cummings accusing Boris Johnson of wanting to go on live TV and getting Chris Whitty, who is the chief medical advisor to the UK government, to inject him with COVID to show everyone that, you know, there's nothing to be frightened of. Cummings obviously didn't quote the Prime Minister. He didn't insist that verbatim that's what he said. But even throwing that allegation out there, where does that come from? Like, you can't help but think, okay, there's no smoke without a fire. Cummings has got this very weird idea in his head from something. Could it have been something that Johnson said in jest? Or would he really be so cynical as to make something like this up? Again, we have to consistently scrutinise and question what's happening here. But even throwing that allegation out there right now, with the hindsight of seeing that more than 100,000 people died of COVID, or at least related to COVID in this country, is shocking. Okay, lots of dom-bombs to get through, so let's move on to this section of the inquiry where the committee wanted to know about what happened in March 2020, which is when the government, as you'll very well remember if you live in the UK, just suddenly turned around and changed their tune completely, having been saying, oh, everything's fine, honestly, don't worry about it, to, fuck, we're going to lock down, we're going to do restrictions, it's going to be a completely different route. That change of tune, this is what the committee was asking him about. And this is the bit of the inquiry that frankly scared me the most, because Dominic Cummings basically made out like there wasn't a soul in Downing Street that actually knew what they were doing. That was the tone that he took, I thought. He was just making out like we were all running around like headless chickens. We were drawing up plans on the back of fag packets. Nobody knew what the fuck was going on. Anyway, he talked about plan A, hadn't he? And, you know, through January and February, plan A was, okay, this virus is probably going to wash up on the UK's shores. Let's let it rinse the UK public and hopefully we'll develop antibodies and everything will be fine. And it became more and more apparent that that route was just not going to work. And he talked about how the science that they had been given by Sage, essentially, was all wrong. And how Sage had said, this peak is going to be at its worst in June. And then everything will be fine by winter. That was the initial plan A. And it became more and more apparent as the data rolled in that those models were just off. That's what Dominic Cummings referenced, is like these models were just completely wrong. And actually, these numbers were getting so bad that that peak was actually right on our doorstep. What we thought was coming in June is actually going to come next week. You know, that was the sentiment in March. And he talked as if it dawned on him before anyone else, or before many other people, that a lockdown was the way to go. Which is kind of ironic, because you remember back in the day, sort of last year, Dominic Cummings was pinned as the guy who loved herd immunity. He was the one that everyone thought didn't want to do lockdown, and let's just sacrifice the vulnerable people, let's just crack on with this plan A. But in this inquiry, he was saying, no, I was the one that wanted a lockdown. I was the one that was trying to persuade everyone else that this was a bad idea and that we should revert to a more stringent policy. So then when the committee said, well, if you were so convinced that a lockdown was a good idea, why didn't you get it done? Dominic Cummings came up with this really odd response. He said, well, I was scared. He said, it's a lot of pressure. I was scared that if I was wrong, then I would have blood on my hands because I would be making the wrong call and locking people down and potentially damaging the economy and all sorts. So I was too scared to take that responsibility on my shoulders. Again, I keep saying this, but we can't assume that Dominic Cummings' entire account of this is bang on. You know, we can't assume it's all accurate. There are multiple sides to this story. There are plenty of people saying that what he's saying isn't true. But that's essentially his tone, was plan A sucked. I clocked that we needed a plan B, and I was scared to as he said, push the panic button. I was scared to change the track and shoulder that responsibility. And so the committee asked him, well, how did the Prime Minister end up changing his mind then? Who developed Plan B? And I'll play you the clip of what Cummings said. But I did say before, it's quite scary listening to this. So yeah, if you've got a glass of wine, fill it to the top before you hear this.
This is the whiteboard. This has essentially Plan B sketched on it. The timestamp is 8:09 on the Friday night. So essentially what's happening at this point is, we're thinking, what do we do on this? At this point, the second most powerful official in the country, Helen McNamara, is the Deputy Cabinet Secretary. She walked into the office while we're looking at this whiteboard. She says, I've just been talking to the official, Mark Sweeney, who is in charge of coordinating with the Department for Health. He said, quote, I've been told for years that there is a whole plan for this. There is no plan. We're in huge trouble. I've come through here to the, Helen McNamara said, I've come through here to the Prime Minister's office to tell you all, quote, I think we are absolutely f***ed. I think this country is heading for a disaster. I think we're going to kill thousands of people. As soon as I've been told this, I've come through to see you. It seems from the conversation that you're having that that's correct.
So there you go. You heard it there. Plan B was essentially, according to Dominic Cummings, drawn up on a whiteboard that he'd wheeled in. And the new approach was essentially scribbled up on there in a matter of minutes. And Cummings did actually share a picture of that whiteboard. So he took a photo of it on his phone and he's now shared it on Twitter. He shared it this morning on 26th of May, if you want to have a look at it. I would say it is worth a look. Just while you're listening to this podcast, whack it up on your phone. It looks like a shit show. It looks like something that a group of university students would draw up half hungover when, you know, the deadline to their assignment is creeping up on them. That's what it looks like. And it was technically the government's only plan. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh because it's absolutely horrific. Technically, according to Dominic Cummings, the government's only plan to, okay, if we're not going to do plan A, what we're going to do, let's try this. But yeah, and I think that is one of the moments that has stuck out to a lot of people. I've seen, you know, I saw that a lot of people were tweeting, quote, we're fucked. based on what Dominic Cummings said. Obviously, in that clip, you heard that it was bleeped out, but he literally did say that in the Inquisition. And I think that's what a lot of people have taken away from it, is if you're going to take one thing away from what Dominic Cummings said, it's that this is how Downing Street were handling things right up till March 2020, days before we ended up going into lockdown. So I think that phrase will very much haunt him and the government. This we're fucked thing. And the MPs in the committee did pick up on that. They didn't just drop it. They said, well, hang on, if you were so fucked, how did you let it get this far? Why did you let it get to that point without there being somebody earlier on to just lightly suggest, well, should we come up with a plan B just in case this is the wrong, this plan A thing is the wrong idea? And Cummings said, no, we let it get this bad before we drew up a quick plan B, because we were going off of this wrong science and we were so reinforced over and over again that this science was right about this peak happening in June that we just never even considered it. And then he talked about this concept of group thinking. And I found this really interesting, actually. He said, look, we were in this group where we were all reinforcing each other's bad ideas. And it was, we were in such a bubble that we stopped taking any advice from outside. And if people criticised us, then we would all reinforce each other and say, oh, well, they don't know because they don't have the same information as us. So it's this kind of group thinking concept where you all convince each other to go down the wrong route and you all get this like false confidence from nowhere, just from backing each other up. I found it really interesting because my dad, he runs a training company. And so I watch him run these team building courses, right, for like grads and managers and whatever across different businesses. And the amount of times that I've seen a group of like 21-year-old graduates do one of these tasks and they develop this group thinking concept that Dominic Cummings referenced, where one person comes up with a shit idea and then they all support it and then they all kind of become immune to common sense because they're all reinforcing this shit idea within and all convincing each other that it's a good plan. I've seen that happen a lot. but I've seen it happen amongst 21-year-old graduates trying to get a ball in a bucket. I've not ever expected that the greatest leaders and the greatest scientific minds in our government would ever enter into that mentality. You would always assume that people who are that experienced and that supposedly smart would consistently surround themselves with people who are pulling them up and going, whoa, are you being challenged on that? Are you being scrutinised on that? Let me tear you down a peg on this idea. And Cummings basically made out like, nope, only people who agreed with the shit plan were ever in the room. And that's how we got to a point where we were, quote, fucked. It's kind of weird. When Dominic Cummings was talking about that moment where he was scribbling on the whiteboard and he had people bursting in and declaring how fucked everything was, he made so many references to it being like a movie. He kept talking about this. And if you've heard any clips, you might have heard this. He kept talking about it was so surreal. It felt like a film. And he was kind of making out like everyone in the room had a different character. So he talked about his data scientist, a guy named Ben Warner. He called him the Jeff Goldblum character. And he talked about him bursting in and saying, right, the aliens are coming and our plan isn't going to work. And he was trying to compare this scenario to like Independence Day or some Michael Bay movie. And I think the aliens were a metaphor for COVID, although I fucking no idea, to be honest, at this point. And it was just very odd to hear this supposedly accomplished and smart ex-political advisor talk about his life as if it's this hokey movie. In fact, and I think I wasn't the only one that found that analogy a bit uncomfortable, later on in the acquisition, he tried to hark back to the movie thing, and he tried to mention this Jeff Goldblum thing, and the MP that was quizzing him said, sorry, can we stick to the data, please? So I'm not sure she had much time for that analogy either. Right, we've covered quite a lot of ground, actually. I'm proud of this. But now we've got to talk about Dominic Cummings' blazing disdain for the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. I'm not sure I've ever watched, I genuinely don't think I've ever watched a British political figure be so disgustingly slanderous and disparaging about another British political figure. I feel like there's always just been this unwritten rule that you don't cross a certain line and you kind of keep it within the realms of being, you know, a bit cricket and a bit fair game. And I don't know, there's just always been this line, I thought. But Dominic Cummings in this inquisition today, he poured his beer all over that line and set fire to it. That's the best way of describing it. Because he was asked by the committee, this was the key question, how would you, Dominic Cummings, rate the performance of the Secretary of State for Health, i.e. Matt Hancock? And, you know, considering Matt Hancock has been the guy that has been supposedly in charge of the health sector's response to this crisis. And this is what Dominic Cummings said.
I think that the Secretary of State for Health should have been fired for at least 15, 20 things, including lying to everybody in multiple occasions, in meeting after meeting in the cabinet room and publicly.
Isn't that shocking? So he said, I think that he, Matt Hancock, should have been fired for 15 to 20 different things. I mean, my God, he should have been fired for 15 to 20 different things. And throughout the course of the entire inquisition, you know, however long it was, 5 or 6 hours long, Cummings kept harking back to this concept that Matt Hancock should have been fired. He shouldn't have kept his job. He talked about how he basically begged Boris Johnson to fire him on different occasions. And he talked about the fact that he considered resigning over the fact that Matt Hancock was still in that job. He called him a liar. He insisted that Hancock was directly responsible for basically most of the things that went wrong with the government's COVID response. Now, Matt Hancock will be getting interviewed in a similar way. He will also play a part in this inquiry. Let me check when that is. I think it's in about 2 weeks' time. Yeah, so in 2 weeks, he will be doing a similar thing and getting interviewed. And since Dominic Cummings accused him of so much, including lying, which is like a really big one, because that's breaking the ministerial code if you knowingly lie to, you know, the people that you're meant to be held accountable by, because Dominic Cummings has accused him of that, he's now going to have to present evidence. So the committee kept saying, right, you've got to give us like tangible proof of these allegations because they're really serious allegations. And Dominic Cummings kept saying, yeah, fine, I will. I've got it. So I'll send it to you. So now the committee's going to have to gather all of that in advance of Matt Hancock's interview, which I'm absolutely sure he'll be shitting himself about because there's so much that he's going to have to fight. And he's got to really kind of try to mend his reputation after Dominic Cummings really tried to slash it. But obviously, until that point, it's not like Matt Hancock's off the hook. He's still got the press to deal with and, you know, his opposition MPs and all the rest of it. So he's still going to have people coming up to him saying, are you a liar? Did you do all these things that Dominic Cummings is accusing you of doing? And I don't know actually if you saw the clip today, but a reporter managed to track him down while he was out on a run. He literally ran away. Let me play you it.
Today, anybody over 30 can get your vaccine, so get out there and get your vaccine.
Government policy, Mr. Hancock. Are you worried about Dominic Cummings giving evidence today, Mr. Hancock?
I know it's probably not that easy to have deciphered what happened there because it's a podcast and you can't see somebody running away, but you could probably hear the faint pitter-patter of Matt Hancock's feet as he sprinted away from the reporter while he was asking him about the Dominic Cummings interview. You'll love to see it. And Cummings, you know, he absolutely threw the most shade at Matt Hancock, that's for sure. But he threw shade at everybody in government. I mean, he didn't keep it all for one person, including himself. So he attacked Boris Johnson and then he kind of ripped into his own intelligence. It was bizarre.
I don't exclude myself from this. Like, in any sensible, rational government, it is completely crazy that I should have been in such a senior position, in my personal opinion. I'm not smart. I've not built great things in the world. It's completely crackers that someone like me should have been in there, just the same as it's crackers that Boris Johnson was in there and that the choice at the last election was Jeremy Corbyn. It's also the case that there are wonderful people inside the civil service. There are brilliant, brilliant officials all over the place. But the system tends to weed them out from senior management jobs. And the problem in this crisis was very much lions led by donkeys over and over again.
So there you go. I'm not smart. I've not built great things in the world. And then when he said the thing about it's crackers that someone like me should have been in there, talking about Downing Street, isn't that just one of the weirdest things you've ever heard from somebody who insisted on sticking around as the Prime Minister's chief advisor for a year and a half during Brexit, firstly, which is obviously one of the most important international treaties that the UK will ever have with another political body. And then, of course, the global pandemic, which we now know was fatal for over 100,000 people. So for someone to openly say, I'm not smart enough to do this job, just quite weird. I didn't know how to feel about that. I think modesty has its place. And, you know, it's good for people to take accountability, but I'll be surprised if a lot of people don't listen to that and just feel annoyed. You can't help but think, well, Mr. Cummings, if you were so incompetent, why didn't you F off and let someone else take up the space if you were a donkey rather than a lion? Why didn't you make way for a lion? And the committee did ask him that, actually. They said, well, did you do anything about that? Did you hire somebody to bridge the gap of intelligence? Or did you think about resigning if you were so out of your depth? And Cummings, he said, yes, I did hire people. And actually, you're right, I should have resigned. And I agree that maybe in March I should have resigned, but definitely by September of 2020, at the latest, I should have stepped down. But again, I'm not sure modesty is the most valuable asset here when we've got the hindsight of him having still stuck in the job for such a long time. Okay, if you've got the brain capacity, let's do one more key thing. But we've got to talk about this Barnard Castle scandal. So Dominic Cummings was asked to go over that and explain what the hell went on there. I'm sure you know about the Barnard Castle scandal, but just in case you know, maybe you're not from the UK and it wasn't big news where you are, or in case you've forgotten what happened. Basically, at the end of March 2020, so literally just a matter of days after Boris Johnson announced the lockdown, and of course Cummings, who still worked as the chief advisor at Downing Street at the time, was supposedly on board with this plan, or in his account today, it was his idea to do the lockdown. So it's March 2020, Boris Johnson announces lockdown. It came out in the news that, Dominic Cummings drove his family to Durham to stay with his parents. So that was scandal number one. And then it came out that he'd actually, on the way back down, infamously taken a 30-mile round trip to a place called Barnard Castle. So he'd basically broken every rule in the book. And when he did this press conference in the Rose Garden of Downing Street to explain himself, he claimed, and this was the bit that nobody could get over, he claimed that the trip to Barnard Castle was actually to test his eyesight, to kind of confirm that he was able to make the long trip back down to London. And I bet you remember the whole saga just got immense backlash. People could not cope with that information. The memes, the internet memes, were superb, but people were pissed off. The entire population were expected to remain in lockdown, and yet the Prime Minister's own chief advisor basically broke all the rules within days of them being announced. And people were not particularly satisfied, or a lot of people weren't particularly satisfied with his reasoning as to why he did that. So his reasoning initially was, look, me and my wife both had COVID. We didn't feel we had any child support in London, so we needed to get up to my parents in Durham so they could help us with our kid because we were both too sick. People just didn't buy that. And they were kind of saying, come on, you must have had somebody in London who could have helped you. Did you really need to drive 300 miles to get child support? All the rest of it. And in this committee meeting, like I say, he was asked about that again. And he definitely spilled more beans. Have a listen.
I think I should probably explain some things about this that were not put into the public domain at the time in the Rose Garden. In the autumn 2019, I had to move out of my house because of security threats for about 6 weeks. On the 28th of February, when I was dealing with the COVID problem, on the Friday night, I was down at Westminster, and my wife called saying there's a gang of people outside saying they're going to break into the house and kill everybody inside. She was alone at the house at the time with our then three-year-old. After that, I spoke to the PM and the Deputy Cabinet Secretary, Helen McNamara, about the situation, and it was suggested that possibly I either move my family into a government accommodation or move them off to family. After that weekend, I then said to my wife, right, we've been discussing it for a month. We've got to get out of here on Friday. We kept the whole thing very quiet. Almost nobody in Number 10 knew about it for obvious reasons, because I didn't want the same problems to pop up at my parents' house up in Durham.
So he really brought in this completely new aspect that he did not mention at all back last year when this saga kicked off. And, you know, when he was talking about this security threat thing, the committee were very empathetic. I think every single MP in the room at one point or another kind of apologised to him that his family had to go through that. I don't think anybody watching is going to doubt that that was a situation, that Dominic Cummings' security was under threat and that people were sending him death threats and all the rest of it. I can 100% believe that. But they still weren't convinced about the Barnard Castle thing. So Jeremy Hunt was saying, why did you go to Barnard Castle to test your eyesight? Who drives 30 miles to test if their eyes work, especially with your wife and kid in the car? And I don't know, I was expecting Cummings to have a response to that, but he didn't. He just sort of laughed and said, listen, if I was going to lie to you about that, surely I'd have come up with a better story. It's too weird for it not to be true. Still, kind of Jeremy Hunt wasn't that satisfied with that. And he was saying, but it just doesn't make any sense. Like, why did you put your kid in the car if you were worried about your eyesight? And Dominic Cummings said, listen, it might seem weird now. It just didn't seem that weird at the time. But yeah, that was quite, I don't know, it was quite an interesting moment of the inquiry. And I'll tell you why. Because Cummings is basically saying, this is me spilling the beans and giving you all the truth. This is everything. I don't care anymore. I don't work for the government anymore. I've got nothing to hide. But by telling this added bit of the story, of the Barnard Castle story and the trip to Durham, Cummings is essentially admitting to lying to us in that initial press conference last year that he did in the Rose Garden. He's saying, like, oh, I didn't actually tell you the whole truth at that time. So now we're expected to accept, oh, okay, you kind of lied to us then, but I'm sure you're telling us the truth now. Do you know what I mean? So the expectation for us to forgive him for evading key information last year, but we're expected to just assume he's giving us the whole truth today, I think it's a long shot. I think a lot of people just don't have a huge amount of trust for Dominic Cummings. And I'll be interested to see how many people bought the story that he gave today. Okay, that was a lot. There's actually a lot more where that came from. Like I say, it was basically a whole day of questions for Dominic Cummings, and he really did spill a lot of stuff. There's quite a few key things that I've missed out. Obviously, PMQs was today as well, and that usually happens around midday. So what was weird was the Dominic Cummings inquisition clashed with PMQs, and you had Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer in the House of Commons talking about it while Dominic Cummings was still being quizzed very nearby by a group of MPs. And Keir Starmer did bring it up in PMQs, but Boris Johnson very quickly batted it away and showed that he just had no time for that topic.
Keir Starmer.
Speaker, the Prime Minister can't have it both ways. Either his former advisor is telling the truth, in which case the Prime Minister should answer the allegations, or the Prime Minister has to suggest that his former advisor is not telling the truth, which raises serious questions about the Prime Minister's judgment in appointing him in the first place. There's a pattern of behaviour here. Now having been told of the evidence, does the Prime Minister accept that he used the words COVID was only killing 80-year-olds, or words to those effect?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, we saw what happened during the pandemic, and when it comes to hindsight, Mr Speaker, I could just remind the Right Honourable Gentleman that he actually, I mean, he denied this at the time, but and then had to correct it, but he voted to stay in the European Medicines Agency, Mr Speaker, which would have made it impossible for us to do the vaccine rollout at the pace that we have.
Mr Speaker, it's not me giving evidence this morning, it's his former advisor. And I note the Prime Minister's careful not to refute these allegations.
So there you go, Boris Johnson at PMQs today showing that he just didn't have any time to talk about this this Dominic Cummings thing, although I don't think he's going to be able to bury his head in the sand forever, because Dom dropped many a bomb today. And I think the press are going to want answers very quickly, and Boris Johnson will be, in a very panicked fashion, trying to work out with his team how the hell to approach this. But it's up to you. Which one do you believe? Are you more inclined to believe what Dominic Cummings is saying because, you know, what's he got to lose? Or are you more inclined to believe the government and look at Dominic Cummings as a kind of disgruntled ex-employee who's just trying to burn everything from the outside? Or are you, frankly, quite cynical about both? Are you sort of saying, probably the truth is somewhere in the middle and they're both just firing shots at each other and we've all got to read between the lines? Let me know what you think. One thing that I've taken away from it is that if any of it's true, we were in such complacent, incompetent, shaky, arrogant and untrustworthy hands from the outset of this pandemic. And you know, plan A was based on flawed data. Plan B was drawn up on the back of a fag packet. All of it puts this huge pit in my stomach, considering everything we've been through. But let me know what you think. Let me know kind of the takeaways that you're going to get. What do you think the fallout's going to be? How do you think Matt Hancock is going to respond? Get in touch with me on social media at JuliaBell_X. And share your thoughts in a nice way, please. And listen, if these podcasts help you, the way to keep them going is to become a patron. It really does mean a lot, those of you who are doing that. And you get access to bonus content. I'm going to do an opinion piece actually tomorrow just exclusively for patrons. If you want to become one, then the link is in the episode description. Thank you so much for listening. I am now going to edit this as quickly as I can to get it out into your ears. And yeah, I hope it was helpful. I'll speak to you in the next one. Okay, goodbye.